Hello and welcome to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep minute by minute in the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, John.
And I'm Zach.
And we are back once again on a Sunday, not a Saturday.
That's true. We're back to normal record time.
Oop, and I just bumped the shit out of my microphone.
That's okay.
Yeah, we're back. It's Sunday. It's beautiful out.
Oh, it is so nice outside.
In the South, we call this false fall because we're only, you know, just getting a little taste of what's, you know, to come later on in the year. But don't worry, it's going to probably be back up in the like high 90s at the end of August, or at the end of September anyways. Yeah. Enough about that. We're here to talk about Dune. Last week, we ended off with a little conversation between Duncan Idaho and Paul and Jessica and Dr. Kynes after Duncan had found Paul and Jessica out trapped in the deep desert.
Yep.
Today we are starting off this minute still in the Ornithopter. Duncan had just confirmed to Jessica and Paul that the Sardaukar had joined the Harkonnens in the attack on the Atreides and Arrakis. Jessica was like, "Are you sure?" And Duncan's like, "You cross swords with the Sardaukar, you know."
Yeah, and importantly, that they hit every major population center.
They did all at once.
At once.
I mentioned this last week, I think on the Friday episode, but it doesn't really seem like Duncan was having a hard time in, you know, taking care of the Sardaukar that he was coming into contact with. So, is everyone just really that bad at fighting, or is Duncan just too OP?
I'm going to go
column A, column B.
Well, no, I'm going to go more on the latter side. I think he's just that good.
He's just that he is that guy.
Yeah, because the Sardaukar have been proven.
Yeah,
countless times throughout the years of how just insanely good fighters they are. So I don't think you can call their stuff into question. Now, if he was fighting a, you know, run-of-the-mill Harkonnen goon, I think, yeah, no problem. Hot knife through butter.
You gotta stop those gooners, dude.
Well, the gooners have taken over. They are currently winning right now.
So. All right, well, it's disappointing. After Duncan, you know, confirms that it's Sardaukar, Jessica then goes to, or turns to Kynes. Has that, so the Emperor is taken aside. What says the Judge of the Change?
Just the most catty question.
Yeah.
So sarcastic, so pithy.
And I know that none of this is this minute. I'm just...
Yeah,
it's been a recap. It's been a week, over a week for us, so I'm just catching everyone back up. And then Kynes' response is, "The Emperor forbids me from saying anything at all." Right at the start of this minute, Paul kind of claps back with... "And yet you risk your life to help save us."
Yeah.
And then there's just like a moment of camera back and forth as they're kind of like staring each other down.
Well, Kynes, like, she looks away almost in like an ashamed manner.
Yeah.
And then when it goes back to Paul, he's just like staring her down. And the emotion that I got from that was as if he was to say, "Yeah, that's what I fucking thought, bitch." We don't linger too much on the faces. It's very quick. But then we cut out to a sunset over the desert. Sunset or sunrise?
I don't know.
Probably sunrise.
Yeah, because when the...
Later on in this week,
before we go back into the Ornithopter, we have that one shot and it's darker outside.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of the Ornithopter flying over the desert. So, yeah, sunrise.
And a glimpse of this massive, massive like wall of sand.
Yes.
Moving across the desert. And I maybe this is a stretch of comparison, but, you know, comparing to fantasy fictional worlds, it looked like the wall from Game of Thrones, the ice wall.
Sure.
Like that level of height and just that like mass.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like easily hundreds of feet. Like, it, yeah. So you see it just like several times higher than even some of the highest dunes in the desert. Like, and we've seen how tall these dunes are based off of, you know, Paul and Jessica running up and down them.
Yeah. Effortlessly.
With ease.
Yeah.
By the way. Yeah, no, we talked about that. But yeah, those dunes just look like tiny little bumps mm-hmm. compared to this wall of a sandstorm.
Yeah. And this is a Coriolis storm.
It is.
I love it. I love that we get to see. I don't love them. They're very dangerous, but it's very, very cool to see. This is not something foreign to us, like on Earth. Like, these things happen.
Hurricanes and cyclones are Coriolis storms.
Yep, so. Exactly. So Coriolis, obviously, I mean, if you don't know, it's referencing the motion of the Earth, the rotational motion within the Earth. So just the rotational motion on Arrakis causes these giant windstorms. And if they formed over water, odds are they would be something like akin to a hurricane that we have on Earth. Since there is no water and it's just open desert, then we get these massive sandstorms.
Yep. We talked about in episode 7 of this show how the intensity of storms is so strong that it can, you know, cause the sand to cut through metal.
Yeah, crazy.
Did a little more research. Apparently, Coriolis storms on Arrakis are capable of having wind speeds up to 700 kilometers an hour. That's or if so you prefer fast. Freedom units, that's 434 miles an hour.
Jeez Louise.
For reference, an EF5 tornado is 200 miles an hour. And that's, yeah.
Man, that is fast.
Yeah. I don't know if you've ever seen what an EF5 tornado is capable of doing.
Nope. I've been through.
It will flatten an entire city. Just gone.
I've been through 2 tornadoes in my life. Yeah. But those were like ones, like little baby ones.
Yeah. Thankfully, we very rarely will get mm-hmm. tornadoes here in Georgia. Not anywhere around us in the, you know, I won't say not entirely. There have been tornadoes that have touched down around, sure. you know, where we are, but it's not like we're in Kansas or Missouri or whatever, where it's just like, you got a plan and you have everything laid out and ready to go for when it hits.
Yeah, it's a certainty out there. It is a rarity here in the city. Right after we see the shots of the storm moving in, we get like a montage of what I'm assuming are Fremen. We're at this point assuming Fremen. It is confirmed later.
Yep.
They are working to secure the Ornithopter and covering
it. We know they're not Atreides.
Yeah, right. This got this like big covering cloth on it, and they're like staking it down to have it not blow away in the storm. And they're putting a lot of faith in these massive spikes.
Yeah. And this little tent top. Meanwhile, we're just talking about a 700 kilometer an hour windstorm. Like,
yeah, that's
that was my thought is, man, they're really just like hoping that this little piece of metal sticking in some sand just holds it down.
I trust them, though. They've been through it before.
Yep. I think it's more of a, you know, camouflaging thing rather than a protection from the storm.
That's what I initially thought too.
Because the tent is that same color as the sand and everything.
Yeah.
So
yeah. We get a unidentified worker kind of in the background going, storm's coming.
Yep. I thought it was interesting that they were speaking in what I'm going to assume is just translated Galak. Rather than speaking in Chakopsa,
because quote unquote English,
common.
Yeah. Well, they may have been talking to the Atreides or, you know, that group.
I don't know. It definitely seemed like they were talking amongst themselves.
Yeah. So we get the camera pans around to what looks like a bunker almost like cut into the rock face.
Yep.
Really cool. You know, not anything super, super futuristic or whatever. It's a very normal thing to see, like in, you know, desert environments, I would assume. But, it's not out of the question to see in a desert environment something carved into the rock like this. But it still looks really cool.
I was going to say it looked markedly different than the previous, you know, building carved into a desert mountainside that we saw just a couple weeks ago with Duncan Idaho and Dr. Kynes as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas that one was much more like a like the temple at Petra in Jordan that you're very used to prominent. See. Very like artisanal, I guess, is the way that I would describe it. I mean, artisanal isn't the right word, but it's a lot more like...
It had a very like brutalist design to it.
This one was very World War II bunker.
Yes.
Kind of feel.
That's exactly what I thought. Like
harsh rectangles, whereas the temple that Kynes was standing at in front of, like we were talking about, the smaller holes cut for the ventilation with the nice ornate door and everything.
Yeah. So Kynes and the remnants of the A-team are...
Damn. Poor man. Do you think the man made it out alive?
I don't think so, man. Damn it. I think we would have seen it by now.
Pour one out.
They start making their way to the entrance. And when we cut to the inside with the big doors opening, and as Kynes is explaining to the group, the storm will be here in a few hours and you know that they'll be safe here.
Yep.
So this is clearly a place that she's familiar with. And we'll learn that, you know, this is something that, is a very unique thing about the desert. This is one of the old ecological testing stations.
Do you know what it's called?
The actual station name?
Yes.
No, I don't.
So, not sponsored from The Art and Soul of Dune, okay. Volume 1.
Not sponsored, heavily referenced.
This area is called the Nexus.
The Nexus, okay. Many
Nexuses were built during the planet's first colonization and were designed by the production team of the film to mimic industrial thermal plant cooling towers.
Okay.
One of the first things that I thought of, like the very first time that I saw this movie, and this is not a reference that's going to hit you at all, so I apologize, but one of the greatest video game trailers of all time was Halo 3 ODST's trailer.
Okay.
And it was also filmed in a what looks like drained nuclear power plant cooling tower.
Okay.
That same like big open round space with that center column and the stuff up top.
Kind of
thing. So I was like, that's very similar because that commercial, I believe, like all the characters are speaking Hungarian in it, and they did a lot of filming for this in Budapest, which is in Hungary. So I was like,
could it be the same place?
No, it's not, because The Art and Soul of Dune does talk about how they kind of like prop this up between two other filming spots. But I was like, oh, that's just a fun little connection, even though it's not a connection at all, but it's one that I made in my head. So it's a connection.
Right.
The Nexus is one of many on the planet, and we will come to learn a little more about what's going on there later on in this week's episodes.
Yep. Yeah, we will. I got some notes on it from the books as well. So Kynes continues and she asks them, do you know what this place is? It's an old ecological testing station. And this is kind of where we get to know the purpose behind them, or at least the original intended purpose.
Yep.
They were meant to tame the planet and free the water beneath the sands. Arrakis could have been a paradise. So this is like the first, I think the first like direct out loud reference that we get to that dream of a green Arrakis. If it's not the first, it's one of a very few that we've had throughout the movie. I couldn't remember another one going back.
I know we talked about
talked about it for sure.
The dream of the green Arrakis when we had the episode where we were introducing Dr. Kynes.
Yeah.
But I'm having a hard time recalling if it's in the film at all.
No, I think this is the first time that they've mentioned it out loud. So, and this, I mean, it definitely is the first mention of like the water trapped underneath the sands.
Yeah.
You know, when you start reading into the encyclopedia, there is evidence that Arrakis used to be a lush, vibrant, you know, healthy ecosystem.
Until those damn worms were brought on the planet.
Just over the eons of the desert has kind of taken over the planet. But there is still evidence that people, you know, they have found on the planet that points to there used to be a healthy ecosystem around.
Yeah.
So the point of these ecological testing stations was to try to bring that water back up, create an atmosphere, and basically do like a terraforming project on the planet.
The ultimate goal of a planetologist.
Yeah, exactly. They were first put on the planet by Imperial prospectors, which I can't not think of like a old timey gold prospector.
Just thinking of the prospector from Toy Story 2.
Yeah, yeah, exactly that. Exactly that. Yeah. But they were long forgotten after they, you know, just abandoned them. Some of the early, some of the oldest stations that they found were used as the first sieges by the original, like, Fremen, or, you know, at that point they were probably going by the Zensuni,
the people that would become the Fremen.
Yeah, exactly. When they found and started using these stations as their sieges, that's where they got the technology and the materials to build the first wind traps and the resources to plant the palms that we see around. So it definitely helped the Fremen kind of build an anchor and establish a good foothold in the planet. So they've been around a long time.
Yeah, it's from what we see, it looks old.
Yeah.
Even though it's still like very pristine, it looks old and it looks ancient. Kind of like what you see in like a movie where there's like a hidden temple kind of thing.
I was about to say, I mean, the desert, even though it's harsh, it is fairly good at preserving things.
It is. Yeah.
Have you ever heard that story where when they were filming or scouting locations to film Lawrence of Arabia, the 60s movie.
Yeah.
The film scouts found...
Lawrence of Arabia is older than 60s.
Is it?
The movie?
I think it's the 60s. Well, I'll fact check in a second. But
I feel like it's like a 40s because it's about...
1962.
Oh, I thought it was older than that.
Yeah. But they actually found a train that was used in the... T.E. Lawrence's raids.
Yeah.
Like, so they found the actual location. The train was like in good condition. Like, obviously, I mean, you couldn't use it again, but it was like for being that old and being abandoned in the desert, it was still in like a good condition.
Yeah. What's crazy is like when you find, I've seen pictures of like whale bones in a desert.
Yeah.
Just like perfectly preserved and everything, which is funny because you'd think over time, like the sand would have worn it down or whatever. You know, the over millions of years from.
Sure.
Nope. Just chilling.
The sands will shift and things will get buried, which, you know, removes them from that level of elements.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just the overall lack of moisture. That's what causes a lot of degradation to things is moisture. So, yeah, it's a good place to preserve it. So, yeah, these stations
when
are.
When you have moisture, you have bacteria that will just. Tear shit up.
So these stations, yeah, they might be thousands of years old, but they still are in good condition just by the nature of the environment of the desert.
Yeah.
And you know, our minute kind of ends right here where we get a couple of shots around the testing station, but that's it. So if you don't mind, I'll go into my little bit of book notes.
By all means.
So at this portion of the book, we are in the third chapter of the second part of the book. And Kynes and Duncan and the rest of the A-team they've made it to the ecological testing station.
Yeah.
And this kind of follows the book like really, really closely. The section that is in focus this week of these five episodes only takes up about a page and a half or two pages of the book. So I don't have a lot of book information to talk about, because if I start going past that, I spoil next week's stuff.
Yep.
So I'm going to be kind of light on my book notes this week. But one of the things that I wanted to call out here is that when they enter into the testing station, Paul remarks, "Oh yeah, this is one of the," he said, "my father wanted to use these as advanced bases." Just for the, you know, the Atreides existing in the desert.
Sure.
And Kynes kind of looks at him, because they're not on exactly the greatest terms right now, in the book. So Kynes looks at him, he goes, "And what would you have used them for?" And Paul responds, "To make this planet a fit place for humans." And Kynes is like, "Good answer, man.
Hell yeah.
Good answer. Good answer." So he's
talking about my dream.
So he's coming around. He's really wary and skeptical of the Atreides, especially after this attack had happened. but he's slowly coming around to Paul throughout these couple chapters.
We'll just wait until Paul really opens up later on this
week. Yeah, right. Cool. So that's all I got. Anything else on your end?
Nope, nothing from me. As always, you can find us online. We are on Instagram at the Dune Minute. We are on Twitter at Dune Minute, and you can email DuneMinute@gmail.com if you'd like to get in touch with us. Otherwise, we'll be back tomorrow with another episode for this week, and we'll see you then.
See you later.